Chapter 2. Servants of Azir. Sol Gage, knight of the Order of Azir, sighed, reversed the knife he held, and forcefully tapped his prisoner on the head with its weighted pommel. The dock warden crumpled without a sound, and the witch hunter lowered him gently to the ground. He sheathed his knife. "Bryn," he said, "get him out of sight."
"Couldn't have thumped him in here, then,"
a deep voice growled querulously. A squat, heavy form stumped from out of the shadows behind Gage. Thick hands caught the unconscious dock warden by the ankles and began to drag him away.
"I'm sorry, my friend. I thought you might be bored."
As Gage spoke, a second shape, much taller than the witch hunter, stepped over the dock warden's body. Gage glanced up into a stern, yet noble countenance, wrought in silver.
"Don't scowl so, Carus. I didn't kill him." "I am not scowling."
Carus' iron oath stood head and shoulders above even the tallest of mortal men. Clad in silver warplate forged from holy sigmarite, the Lord Veritant of the Hallowed Knights was an imposing sight. A cloak of deep azure hung from his shoulders, and dark eyes peered out from behind his war mask, the only sign of the man within.
"No, not just a man," Gage reminded himself.
"A Stormcast Eternal, one of Sigmar's chosen warriors, forged anew on the anvil of apotheosis and made into something better, or at least something stronger. Where most Stormcast were warriors first and foremost, the Lord Veritants were, like the witch hunters of the Order of Azir, tasked with rooting out spiritual and physical corruption, though in a far more direct manner than their mortal counterparts."
"I am simply ill at ease with such skullduggery, my friend," Carus said. "This is not the way it should be done. We should confront them openly and drive back their shadows with our light."
Carus thumped the ground with his staff, and the lantern of abjuration which surmounted it flashed softly.
"There will be plenty of that before the end, I have no doubt," replied Gage. "For now, we must meet shadow with shadow, lest our quarry take flight." "Yes."
"Because they have an airship," Gage added, after a moment.
"I understand."
"Are you smiling? I can't tell." Carus grunted in noncommittal fashion, and Gage sighed. Trying to elicit a chuckle from his stolid companion had become something of a challenge for him. The Stormcast Eternal whistled sharply. The Griffhound trotted towards him, carrying the remains of the rat in her beak, and Carus stroked the creature's wedge-shaped head affectionately.
"Good girl, Zephyr," he rumbled.
Gage turned his attentions to the warehouse the dock warden had indicated. Like most of the warehouses on the Aether Dock, it was a square structure, built for durability rather than for looks. It followed the Duodin design, with a high-peaked roof of flat planks that kept off the worst of the weather, and a shell of walkways and loading platforms that entrapped it. It seemed to crouch in the shadow of taller warehouses, a web of wooden gantries and sky-cutter berths stretching above it. A large ether key had been built onto the roof, projecting outwards like a semicircular awning of wooden planks and support pillars. Tarn's airship, the Hopeful Traveller, was docked there, floating above the city, snug in its nest of gangplanks, ropes and pulleys. It resembled a sea-going galley, save that its masts were burdened with thick canvas ether bags rather than billowing sails. The double rows of oars on either side of the vessel were wide, fan-shaped assemblages of wood and cloth, perfect for catching the wind.
"The ship is still docked," Gage murmured. "Are you in there, I wonder?"
"Your spies say he is," Carus said.
Gage could almost hear the Stormcast frowning.
"Spies can be wrong, or suborned. We will find out soon enough. Whether he is or not, Rollo Tarn must be put to the question. And if he has committed crimes, he must be made to answer for them."
Gage nodded absently. Rollo Tarn. The name was common enough, as was the man it was attached to. a human sky merchant of some minor standing. While the Caradron jealously guarded their routes through the skies of the mortal realms, a few daring individuals had learned of other paths, sailing more dangerous winds than those taken by the Sky Duodin. Now, thousands of airships, skycutters and leafboats found their way to the ether docks every day, sailing along the rift lanes. While they could fly neither as high nor as swiftly as the Caradron vessels, they served much the same purpose, carrying goods between the two halves of the twin-tailed city. It was mostly food these days, but some, like Tarn, had become wealthy trading in building materials. Despite the nature of the realm, coming by usable wood was difficult in Gairan. The forests, by and large, belonged to the Everqueen and the Sylvaneth Treekin. Alariel was the goddess of life, and Gairan had been her domain for as long as the mortal realms had existed. Though the plague god, Nurgle, had all but wrested the realm from her, still she claimed a proprietary interest in it. The forests were hers, from the smallest sapling to the mightiest oak, and her servants would not hesitate to punish those who violated the ancient laws of the Everqueen, whatever their reasons. Thus, logging was all but unheard of without great ritual and expense. Yet Tarn seemed to have no trouble bringing in copious amounts of timber, which the city's rulers, the Grand Conclave, bought eagerly, without asking too many questions. The city was hungry, in the way of all cities, and was expanding as its population swelled, growing as the God King had decreed that it must. Such expansion was key to the eventual reconquest of the mortal realms, but it meant that the need for wood and stone was endless. And Tarn was only too eager to supply it. The hopeful traveller brought in a new load of freshly cut timber every week, and it soon vanished into the city to be made into new buildings and palisades. But where was the wood coming from? Not a whisper of Tarn's source had reached the usual gossips among the trade guilds. That by itself was suspicious. Unfortunately, as far as the Grand Conclave was concerned, suspicion was not enough to cancel such a lucrative contract. Tarn had made himself integral to the city's growth. Not a crime in itself, but there was something there. Gage could feel it. "What seems perfect rarely is," he said softly. It was a saying among his brethren in the Order. Perfection was a mask worn by chaos, and the prettiest faces often hid a singular ugliness beneath. It was his task to seek out that ugliness and to purge it. Such was the duty handed down to the Order of Azir and its servants by the God King, to find the darkness wherever it laired and bring it to the light. Instinctively, Gage ran a finger along the badge pinned to his lapel. The hammer and the comet. The sign of Sigmar Heldenhammer, God King of Azir, the founder of Azirheim, and the creator of the Stormcast Eternals. It was Sigmar who had led the first tribes of mortal men out of barbarism and set them on the path of civilization. And it was Sigmar who had freed the other gods from their ancient prisons, so that the mortal realms might flourish beneath their guidance. It had been Sigmar who had first struck a blow against the ruinous powers, keeping the realm safe from their corrupting influence. And it would be Sigmar and his servants who would drive the dark gods back again, freeing the mortal realms from their monstrous clutches. Sigmar was the light in the darkness, and that darkness was here. Not just in the city, but close by. Gage could smell it, taste it. It was on the air and in the water. It was like an itch he couldn't scratch. He realized he was tapping the pommel of his sword hard enough to make it rattle in its sheath. With an effort of will, he stopped himself. He felt Karras's eyes on him.
"You can feel it," the Lord Veritant rumbled. "The call of chaos."
He pressed a hand to his chest plate.
"In here. Like the echo of a song you do not recall hearing, or the whisper of an unfamiliar voice echoing up out of the deep."
Gage nodded.
"It seems impossible to find it here, in a place sanctified by the hand of the God King himself. And yet..."
"Sanctity is not enough. Even the strongest stones eventually crumble."
"Yes,"
Gage frowned. Tarn has friends in high places. They will not abandon him, not without proof. So we must find it, even if they would rather that we didn't.
Ammahal is the greatest of the cities of Sigmar, save Azerheim itself. Anything that threatens it must be rooted out and brought to light. That is our task, and our privilege.
Karras's voice was hard and sharp.
None may gainsay us.
Not successfully, at any rate, Gage murmured. Karras's griffhound stiffened, the feathers on her neck ruffling. The Stormcast placed a restraining hand on her.
Quietly, Zephyr, he murmured.
He glanced at Gage and gestured upwards with his staff.
Kuvar is back.
Gage looked up at the web of walkways and gantries above. A slim shape dropped down through them, landing lightly on the ground nearby. Despite the heavy fur cloak and armor she wore, she made no sound at all.
Well?
Gage asked, as the newcomer rose to her feet. He'd tasked Kuvar with seeing to the rest of the dock wardens on duty. He didn't want any interruptions or surprises, whatever the night brought. If Tarn knew he was being investigated, things would become that much more difficult.
They will not trouble us,
Kuvar said. The elf's voice was a harsh rasp, and her fine-boned features were stern and marked by faint scars. The Lion Ranger was tall, taller than Gage, though still falling short of the towering Karras. She wore a long coat of golden scale mail beneath a cloak of white fur. Her flaxen hair was tied back from her face, revealing the tapered knife points of her ears, and she rested a broad-bladed war axe in the crook of her arm. That axe, with its wide double blade, had tasted the blood of monsters and men alike, and she had wielded it for longer than Gage had been alive. Perhaps even longer than the mortal realms themselves had existed. There were scribes who claimed that the origins of the Lion Rangers might stretch back to the world that was, but only Sigmar and his fellow gods knew for sure, and they weren't saying. Some among his order whispered that Kuvar had been there the day the last gate of Azir had slammed shut, sealing the celestial realm away from the rest of the mortal realms as they reeled beneath the assaults of chaos. They also said that she had been there, waiting, the day it opened once more, centuries later. He could believe it.
Dead?
Gage asked. Kuvar was the type to cut a knot rather than untie it.
Unconscious. I do not kill slaves.
Gage snorted.
Hardly slaves. They're paid a fair wage.
He paused.
Perhaps not enough to deal with the likes of us, but still. Comets in their pockets and a roof over their heads. What more can any man ask?
Not to get hit on the head and hidden in a rubbish heap,
Bryn growled as he stepped out of the alleyway, dusting his hands. The Dwarden was almost as broad as Kuvar was tall, and thick with muscle beneath the heavy Gromril warplate he wore. His bald dome of a head surmounted a thick profusion of greying beard, much of it bound in thick plaits. Beneath shaggy brows, two pale blue eyes twinkled with amusement. He wore a brace of drakefire pistols holstered across his barrel chest, and had a heavy two-handed hammer slung over his back.
Then again, you humans are odd ones, complaining about every little thing.
Bryn nodded back towards the alley.
I hid him well.
Took you long enough,
Gage said.
Don't ask, unless you want it done properly.
Bryn had once served as an ironbreaker in the retinue of a Dwarden warden king, though which one he had never said, just as he had never explained why he had left the king's service in the first place. The forge-proven armour he wore was decorated with golden knotwork and marked with Khazalid runes, which shone strangely in the light of Karras's staff. Gage had worked with Kuvar and Bryn for longer than he cared to calculate. A man in his profession needed trustworthy swords at his back, whatever their race. They may have had their own reasons for aiding him in his investigations, but they had saved his life, and he theirs, more times than he could count. By comparison, Karras was a newcomer, though the Stormcast Eternals of the Hallowed Knights had warded Hammerhal Gyra since its founding. As a Lord Veritant, Karras's authority exceeded Gage's own. While a Lord Veritant's place was usually on the battlefield, they would occasionally aid the Order of Azir if the need arose. In those instances, it was traditional that they defer to the Order, though that often depended on the Lord Veritant in question. Karras, for his part, seemed content to follow Gage's lead, at least for the moment. Gage looked at the elf. "The warehouse?"
"Unguarded,"
Kuva said. She hesitated.
"Oh, so it seems."
"That's all to the good. If we can do this quietly, so much the better. We'll check the warehouse first, then the airship."
"We should burn it,"
the elf added. "Which, the warehouse or the airship?"
"All of it."
She looked around with an expression of distaste. Gage smiled. The Lion Ranger had little liking for cities, even one as beautiful as this. Her order were as much creatures of the wild as the beasts whose skins they wore. They were savage and graceful, with little tolerance for what they saw as the foibles of human and Duardin kind, especially when it came to the reliability, or the lack thereof, of walls and cities.
"I shall bear your suggestion in mind," Gage said.
He tapped the grip of one of his pistols. The Baroque weapons had been crafted in Azaheim, long before Gage had been gifted them by his mentor upon his ascension to a full knight of the Order. They were filled with blessed shot, and he had used them to end the life of more than one enemy of the Celestial Realm. Bryn chuckled, a query mark of sweet smoke rising from the bowl of his pipe. He sniffed.
"Airships! Only a manling would think of such things."
Gage glanced at him.
"Your cousins, the Caradron, might beg to differ." "Aethercraft! Different sort of thing entirely! Duardin engineering that. Not entirely respectable, but you have to make allowances sometimes."
He pointed at the airship.
"That, however, is a boat with a bag of hot air attached to it."
He puffed on his pipe.
"Might as well be magic."
"It is magic,"
Kuva said, looking down at the Duardin. The elf hefted her broad-bladed war axe onto one shoulder. She frowned.
"Human magic."
"Better than elf magic, I suppose."
"Quiet, Bryn," Gage said firmly. "I'm not concerned with how it flies so much as what it might be carrying, and the sooner we check the warehouse, the sooner we find out. Let's go." Bryn gave a gap-toothed smile.
"Finally,"
he said, before tapping out his pipe and stowing it somewhere in his armour. Kuva led the way, moving quietly. Gage and Bryn followed close behind. Karras brought up the rear, moving more slowly, so as to reduce the clatter of his warplate. Blessed Sigmarite was many things, but mystically silent wasn't one of them. A blow from Bryn's hammer was sufficient to shatter the lock on the warehouse doors. Kuva went in first. Gage followed, one hand on the hilt of his sword. The warehouse spread out around him. The interior was high and vaulted, the upper reaches crisscrossed with walkways. Moss lanterns hung from the floor-to-ceiling support beams, and the bioluminescent foxfire within them cast a pale glow across the source of Tarn's fortune, stacks of freshly cut logs. The stacks were twice Gage's height and made up of dozens of logs resting on heavy pallets. They filled the warehouse, front to back. The smell of green wood and pulp was thick on the air. And something else. Something indefinable. Gage looked around, frowning. Karras met his gaze and nodded. He could sense it as well. Gage had learned, through hard experience, to trust his instincts. There was something here. They just had to find it. "Spread out," he said softly, "but stay in sight of one another."
"What are we looking for?"
Bryn said. The Duardin studied the stacks warily. "Anything suspicious?"
"More suspicious than two manlings, an elf and a Duardin sneaking around a warehouse in the middle of the night. The elf's right. Let's just save time and burn it down."
Gage looked at the Dwadin. It was an old game, this. The dispossessed, those ancient Dwadin clans who'd lost their ancestral holds and lands, had little patience where chaos was concerned. Concepts like guilt and innocence were inconsequential when it came to the very real threat of corruption. Many among the Order of Azir shared that outlook. Gage did not. Every innocent condemned to the pyre only made the enemy's cause stronger. When he didn't reply, Bryn chuckled.
Aye, then. I guess not. I'll keep my eyes open.
He strode off, whistling softly. Gage shook his head. If he and the others hadn't been working together as long as they had, he might have been worried. He moved through the stacks carefully, studying them. Shadows cascaded across them in the soft glow of the moss lanterns. More than once, he caught himself staring at a point in the darkness, thinking he'd seen something. But there was nothing there. He glanced over at Karas and his griffhound. The beast stalked about, hackles stiff and tail lashing. She sensed something.
That makes two of us, Gage muttered.
He turned, fingers tapping against the pommel of his sword. It felt as if the warehouse were holding its breath somehow, as if something was watching, waiting. But what? Gage turned. Some instinct, honed by years of investigation into dark places, drew him to the nearest stack of logs.
Something about this wood, he said to himself.
He pulled off his glove and ran his hand along the rough-hewn logs. The wood was dark and sticky with sap, but it was sturdy and good for building, surprisingly so, according to some of his sources. Where was Tarn getting it? The bark seemed to wriggle beneath his touch, and he jerked his hand back.
Sun and moon,
he muttered, as the bark split, rearranging itself into the approximation of a grinning face. Sap ran down from the sides of its too wide mouth, like drool, as it smacked its lips at him. An inhuman chuckle rose from the wood. The bark splintered and bulged, thinning like wet dough, as the face rose. Two massive pink hands squirmed out of a knothole that was far too small to contain them. They clutched at Gage, and he stumbled back.
Karas! Avaunt, filth!
The Lord Veritant roared from behind him. He struck the floor with the ferrule of his staff, and the lantern of abjuration atop it blazed brightly. Azure light washed over the stacks of wood. The thing in front of Gage squealed and retreated into its log, diminishing like smoke being drawn through a flue. As the light faded, Gage heard the scuff of bare feet on the floor. He spun, drawing his rapier.
Ambush!
He cried. He blocked a blow meant to stave in his skull and opened his attacker's throat with a quick slash. He looked down at the man he had killed. He was muscular and clad in dark robes, his head hidden behind a golden mask, and his hand still limply clutching a serrated blade. The mask leered up at him, vaguely avian, but horribly, hideously, something else. Gage felt a chill course through him at the sight of the ruinous sigils etched onto the mask. They seemed to twist in on themselves in the dim glow of the moss lanterns.
"The Changer of Ways," he hissed.
It was the mark of Tzeentch, the chaos god of deception and fortune. Its acolytes came in secret, wearing the mask of innocence. While the servants of the other dark gods haunted the fringes of civilization, the servants of Tzeentch nestled within it like a black seed. They could be anyone and anything. His suspicions regarding Tarn were true then. Gage felt no triumph, only a sick sensation as he gazed at the stacks of wood. Shadows clumped across the logs in strange patterns, and he felt a chill as a sound like thousands of rats scuttling across the stacks whispered through the warehouse.
Demons. There were demons in the wood.
The thought of such hell-born nightmares loose in the world was repulsive to him on a spiritual level. Demons were shards of the dark gods made hideous flesh. They could only be called forth into the material realm by certain abominable rites, practiced by those who had given themselves over, body and soul, to the ruinous powers. Laughter echoed through the warehouse. The moss lanterns flickered and went out, plunging the building into darkness. Gage could hear the rustle of cloth and the thump of feet. More acolytes? Or something worse?
"Guard yourselves! We are not alone in here!"
He drew a pistol.
"No, you most certainly are not. Gage, is it?"
a voice called out. It seemed to echo from nowhere and everywhere. Instinctively, Gage looked up, but he could see no one on the shadowed walkways above.
"A knight of the Order of Azir,"
the speaker continued.
"I would be flattered if your sort were not thick as fleas in the cities of men. It was inevitable that one of you would pull on the thread of fate and come for us."
"Us? Us who? Who are you? Tarn?" Gage spoke loudly. Sometimes the servants of the dark gods liked to talk. That volubility could be used against them. At the very least, it might buy him some time. Motes of ugly light danced across the stacks of wood, and Gage thought he could make out more demonic faces squirming in the bark. The air took on an oily tang. He glanced up and spotted a shape he thought was Kuva creeping along the top of a nearby stack of wood. How the elf had gotten up there so quickly he couldn't say, but he knew she was searching for the source of the laughter. He needed to buy her time to do so.
"Well," he continued, "whom do I have the honour of addressing?"
More laughter, though it wasn't the wild cackle of a lunatic, which only made it worse. As it faded, voices rose in a slow, sonorous chant. The moss lanterns blazed to new life, revealing dozens of men and women wearing golden masks and standing in ragged rows between the stacks. The acolytes of Tzeentch were clad much like the man he'd killed, and they were clutching a variety of weapons. Without the masks and robes, they could have been anyone. Merchants, farmers, sewer jacks, or beggars.
"Bryn? Karras? I could use some help," Gage called out, hoping they would reach him before the acolytes overwhelmed him.
"Who are we?" the voice called out. "We are your neighbours, witch hunter. We are the devoted singing false praises to the tyrant god Sigma. We are the labourers who work so hard in the orchards and fields, harvesting the bounty of Gairan to feed those who live on the other side of the realm gate. We are you."
"Always so theatrical," Gage said, and fired.
A mask pitched backwards. The chanting ceased, and the acolytes came at him in a rush. He met the first of them with his rapier, but there were too many to face alone. For everyone he downed, two more took his or her place. The acolytes did not scream as they came, but instead chanted. It might have been a word, or perhaps a name. The sound of it grated against Gage's ears and pricked at his concentration. It was all he could do to keep their blades from finding him.
"Gage, look out!"
Kuva shouted from somewhere above him. He glanced up and saw Kuva dart across the top of a stack, moving swiftly. As she ran, she sliced through the ropes holding the stack together. Logs rumbled down, smashing into the surprised acolytes. The elf rode the rolling logs to the bottom of the stack and leapt. She landed among a knot of acolytes. Her war axe flashed and bodies fell.
"Quick thinking!" Gage shouted appreciatively.
She glanced at him and nodded. Then her eyes widened, and Gage felt a tremor run through the boards beneath his feet. He whirled, almost too late, and dodged aside. A heavy, spiked flail crashed down, pulping several of the logs. He scrambled back. The flail's wielder was no man in a mask. Instead, it was a being out of a nightmare, a hulking brute clad in turquoise armour. One half of its chest and one arm were bare of armour, revealing pale flesh, surmounted by a monstrous growth, a twisted, parasitic sibling, eyeless and chattering, its thin arms clutching a staff. The brute drew the sword slung from its hip with its free hand, a sickly flame clinging to the blade. Gage stared at it in horror. "Cursling," he whispered. He'd read of such monsters and heard stories from other members of his order. Curslings had once been men, before their lust for secret knowledge had twisted them into silent repositories of foul lore. The growth on its shoulder was a trechle, a demonic homunculus, a physical manifestation of all that the cursling had learned. The eyeless trechle gibbered in excitement and slashed the air with its staff, as if urging its hulking sibling on. The cursling's breath rasped like a bellows, gusting from the vents in its featureless helm. It swung the flail again, splintering a log and showering Gage with shards of bark. He ducked back. He couldn't match its strength. He glanced around, seeking aid, but it looked as if his companions were preoccupied. Kuva was surrounded by a ring of acolyte blades. He could hear Karus bellowing nearby and the shriek of his griffhound. And Bryn.
"Kazukan kazuka!"
Bryn roared as he crashed into the cursling, knocking it back a step. The Duwadin spun his hammer about as if it weighed less than nothing, striking again and again. Bryn glanced at Gage.
"You called? I came, manling!"
He hit the cursling again, staggering it. With a snarl, it slashed at him, the burning blade carving greasy contrails through the air before it chopped into the floor. The Duwadin avoided the blow and drove the ferrule of his hammer into the side of the creature's skull. The cursling moaned and caught Bryn a glancing blow with its flail, sending the Duwadin skidding across the warehouse floor, scattering acolytes. The creature spun away from the dazed Duwadin, moving quicker than Gage had expected. The vile, blue-green radiance of its baroque warplate stung his eyes, and he fell back before its onslaught. The flail it wielded in one hand slammed down, shattering the wooden planks of the floor. A moment later, its sword hissed out, trailing unnatural flames. Gage retreated, trying to put some distance between them. Beyond the cursling, he could see Kuva fighting her way towards Bryn, who was clambering slowly to his feet. Acolytes crouched on the walkways above, chanted and gestured, unleashing crackling bolts of sorcerous energy. The elf dove aside, narrowly avoiding the explosive darts. She leapt over the cursing Duwadin and lightly scrambled up the stack of logs, her eyes fixed on the walkways above. He lost sight of his companions as the cursling's flail snapped out again, nearly taking his head off. He ducked aside and drew a thin line of ichor from its bare arm with the tip of his rapier. The monstrous trechle undulated towards him, its eyeless face contorted in a snarl. It swung its staff at his head, gibbering in rage. A long blade interposed itself, catching the blow. Karus forced the cursling back a step, as staff and sword screeched apart in a scattering of sparks.
"No, beast, face me," the Stormcast rumbled. "I am Sigmar's light, and his wrath made manifest. I am the faithful."
The cursling groaned in wordless anticipation and stomped towards this new foe. Gage took the opportunity to draw the second of his pistols. He took aim at the cursling's broad back as it traded thunderous blows with the Lord Veritant. The two massive warriors seemed evenly matched, but Gage had no intention of leaving things to chance. The cursling was only a slave, a tool of the cult. Its master, the cult's magister, would be close by, watching the fray through the eyes of the cursling itself. The magister was Tarn. It had to be. But the question was, where was he? Gage pushed the thought aside. Time enough for that later. He took a steadying breath and squeezed the trigger. The boom of the pistol was loud, but the cursling's scream was even louder. It convulsed in agony and spun. It lunged, and its burning blade nearly opened Gage from crown to crotch. The trechle spat something in a shrill voice, and a sorcerous bolt erupted from the homunculus's twitching hands. Gage swung behind a support pillar. Heat enveloped him as the bolt struck it. He could smell fire and realized that the warehouse had been set aflame. The cursling's blade chopped into the pillar just above his head. Gage shoved away from it and slashed at the brute. It groaned and struck at him with its flail. An acolyte lunged at Gage, blade slashing a button from his coat. He spit at the cultist, all too aware of the cursling looming over him, blade raised. He turned and looked up into the creature's empty gaze. There was no malice there, no hatred, only passionless intent. It was an automaton of meat, hollowed out and repurposed by forces beyond the ken of man. It raised its blade, and the flames, limning its brutal length, blazed with hideous radiance. With a howl, Zephyr leapt atop it. The Griffhound savaged the Tretchley with her beak as she clung to the brute's shoulder. The cursling warbled in rage and began to thrash, trying to dislodge the tenacious beast. Gage saw his chance and lunged, driving his blade home into the creature's unprotected armpit. His sword grated on bone and then sunk past into something soft, something important, he hoped. The cursling stiffened, twin screams echoing from both heads. It staggered back, pulling itself off Gage's blade. With a convulsive heave, it hurled the Griffhound away before turning and lumbering off into the darkness, leaving a trail of ichor in its wake. Gage took a step after it. It would take more than that to kill such a beast. Several acolytes moved to block his path. They raised their hands, chanting, conjuring sorcerous bolts. He tensed as the searing bursts of magical energy hurtled towards him, too close to dodge. Suddenly, Karus stepped between Gage and the sorceress missiles. He swept out his staff, and the shimmering bolts dissipated in the light of the lantern of abjuration. From above, he heard a scream and stepped back as the body of an acolyte crashed to the floor. He looked up and saw Kuva on the walkway, war axe dark with the blood of her foes. The elf looked down and gestured with her head.
Gage, go! The Dwadin and I are more than capable of killing a few fools in bird masks.
Gage hesitated, but only for a moment. She was right. He caught Karus's eye and gestured. The Lord Veritant nodded solemnly and whistled. His Griffhound gave a squalling bark and loped in pursuit of the fleeing cursling. The nimble beast would stay on its trail, whatever obstacle lay between them. Karus started after the creature, his tread shaking the floorboards. His staff snapped out to club one acolyte from his feet, even as his sword slashed down to crack another's shield in two. Gage hurried in his wake, reloading his pistol as he ran.
"Come, witch hunter," Karus growled. "Our quarry seeks the safety of the shadows. Let us drag him into the light."